Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another exciting episode of Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm the hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with the coolest of co-hosts, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Good afternoon, Annie. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. As always, on this August the 3rd, 22 years ago, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait on a Friday night. Yep. Thank you for that introduction, and welcome, everybody. Just a couple quick reminders. Southern Sense is reaching out to you. The number one show on Blog Talk Radio has Facebook. We have Twitter. So we'll post our links in the chat room during the show. With that being said, I'll throw it back to the former NYPD of the streets of Brooklyn.
But don't forget, it's very important also to say I was a small business owner. One of the backbones of employment here in America. So take that, Obama.
I see that show on late night, the NYPD Blues. I think of you. I'm always, you know, whenever there's a female cop, it's always somehow I picture, that's Annie, yelling or screaming with just those little precincts. Because you kind of picture sometimes precincts are luxurious and lots of space, and when probably it is the opposite. It's probably just a little hole-in-the-wall room.
Absolutely. I mean, you walked out of there and you had to clean yourself off afterwards. So I don't even want to talk about it. About even standing next to prisoners. You don't even want to do that. Anyway, we have an exciting show here today. We've got a special guest we're going to bring on shortly. He's Matthew Boyle with the Daily Caller. But I want to also give a special shout out today to Tremaine, who is undergoing surgery today. He's known as GGT-183, and he's going to be in our prayers. And hopefully he'll get himself back on the feet and back on the air with conservative primetime. I've got one announcement today, and I'm not even going to bother to make this announcement. I'm going to let someone else do it for me. So here we go.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Please join me this September 15th when, along with the Lieutenant Dan Band, I will return to Beaufort, South Carolina for the third annual Lieutenant Dan Weekend for an evening of fun, music, and show of support for our nation's military and their families. We'd also like to invite you or your company to join us in showing thanks to our nation's most severely wounded veterans by honoring a hero of your choice with a freedom flag. These freedom flags will be flown at the concert and are a perfect way to honor a special veteran in your life. 100% of the tax-deductible donation for a freedom flag will be used by all the Volunteer Independence Fund to support those most severely wounded veterans of the War on Terror. Myself and the rest of the Lieutenant Dan Band look forward to seeing you all once again this September, and I thank you for your support.
Yeah, that's a reminder that September 9th through the 15th will be the Lieutenant Dan Week, and that's where they're expecting approximately 100 wounded veterans and their family members will be here in Beaufort, South Carolina. It's a week-long event where they take them golfing, fishing. There's a special retreat that has been built for them, and 99 cents of every dollar you donate. So if you have $5 in your pocket right now, go to LDW3.com, LDW3.com, and make a donation. 99 cents of every dollar goes directly to these veterans. It's used to bring them in for the week, for their housing, their food. It's used to build houses for them, special houses they can operate independently, hence the term Independence Fund. It's used to get them wheelchairs and a whole mess of other things that, you know, where the Veterans Affairs can only go so far. These volunteers, 100% volunteers, so they don't get paid a penny. They work out of their kitchens, their offices, their backyards. Everything is just 99 cents on every dollar is paid for these veterans. It's a very worthy cause, and I think it's one of the best charities out there. Matter of fact, they have so much of a response that they've had a second day of concert. So Gary Sinise is going to be here on September 15th. Tickets are already on sale on LDW3.com. But on the day before, the 14th, we will be broadcasting out of Cat Island here in Beaufort, South Carolina, from the golf course. And we'll have some of the veterans on the air like we did back in April. But that night, on the 14th, they're going to have a second concert, and it's going to include Dale Betty and Outlaw. It's going to have Lieutenant Colonel Mike Corrado and the Machine Gun, and Nashville recording artist Rocky Lynn. So they've had such a response that they're having 2 days of concerts, Saturday and Sunday. Friday and Saturday. So please check out LDW3.com.
What a great cause. I mean, just what a – we talk about this all the time, but it certainly is. In a day and age where it's all about me, or I have to make the moves which is right for me, here's a bunch of people which is doing right for the veterans. It's just a great cause. And, of course, you'll be there broadcasting live. I hope everything works okay. I don't want to have your husband calling me up all times. Hey, can you hear Annie? It's great, you know, to be a part of that. I'm really jealous. One of these days we're going to do a live show together at one of these functions, and God bless our veterans. They are just the best ever.
Well, then get your butt down here on the 14th.
Yeah, well, some of us are trying to run a business.
All right. Well, people that listen in know that we start off every single show with a dedication to a fallen military person, and today we have a special dedication. So, Mike, if you can pull up the Army theme, and we want to do a dedication here to Private First Class Adam Rust.
If you give me a second, Mike. Of all things, mouse.
Well, that's
go
the beauty of locked off
reading.
Radio.
I'll play the music. Oh, I think I got it now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
This
we're doing the Army.
This is from the Greenville, South Carolina newspaper. Her husband survived 3 overseas tours of duty, but when her son told her he was being shipped off to Afghanistan, Amanda Ross of Lyman, South Carolina, couldn't help but feel she would never see him alive again. Her premonition turned out to be accurate. After being in the war-torn nation for just 3 weeks, her son, Adam Ross, 19, was killed in action. It was the second time this summer that America's longest war claimed the life of an upstate South Carolina soldier. Sergeant First Class Red Thomas was killed June. They said he was a competition commander for what they had never done. Third Airborne Brigade Combat Brigade. Afghanistan more than 2 years ago, Commander Ross said. Adam and my mother were 2 years old. He was born in Virginia Beach, Virginia, when his father was stationed there with the Navy. The family moved to London when Adam was elementary school, and his father transferred to the National Guard Reserve. Then went on active duty. Since he had been in Afghanistan, he had talked to his son, my first class, quarterback, nearly every day. When my son was captured, I had to bring him to the house. I was then on the walk. Still in shock. My children are in the military. Adam, brother John, younger brother Jacob. He was just a very quiet, very quiet. Miles and well-behaved young man with dignity, honesty, and courage. He's a very handsome young man. Like, what I mean. He had a side. Not suffering. He sacrificed his life to make sure. Car and drive down to the coast whatever time of the wanted, and freedom to sleep in our bed on a warm night of cool summer day. We are immensely proud of him, she said. He is rough. That goes out to Adam Ross. And with that, we're going to do a further dedication to all military and to Adam's family. My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon. And you can find this song.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America.
And you can find that song at toddallenshow.com. Okay, Mike, ready to rock and roll?
I certainly am. Nice dedication, by the way, too.
Thanks. I have to remember to keep a box of tissues, otherwise I end up having to run out of the studio while that song plays. Anyway, let's bring on our guest. He's with the Daily Caller. He is a journalist, and he's been scooping the nation on a bunch of stories. Let's welcome aboard Matthew Boyle. Good afternoon, Matthew.
Great to be here.
It is a pleasure.
Welcome, Matthew.
How's it going?
All right, Matthew, I have to admit that when I was doing a little research to determine whether or not I was going to bring you on as a guest, I looked at your picture, and I'm wondering, do you shave yet?
Yeah, I'm 24 years old. Yep, I'm young. So,
but I was listening to you up on Fox News when you were breaking the story on Fast and Furious, and I do keep notes on everything that we talk about in the show. And back in February of 2011, I started talking about Fast and Furious, and and being retired law enforcement, I always when I hear of someone, an officer, whether or not they're with ICE or with Sheriff's Department, I always end up looking at the stories because it brings it home to me. I mean, I lost friends on the job. And whenever I see that, I want to know what happened. You know, why did it happen? Could it have been prevented? And when I started reading about Terry Bryan, and I said, wait a minute, there's a lot more to the story. You want to go and start telling us about this?
Yeah, sure. So basically what had happened was that Brian Terry was a specialized Border Patrol agent, meaning he was part of an elite unit called BORTAC, and they did, like, special Border Patrol ops and different things. So on December 14th, 2010, he and the rest of his group, his unit, BORTAC unit, were in an area in Arizona, about 20 miles inside the border, and it's called Peck Canyon. And what had happened was is that and what their job was to do is to keep an eye out for different people. It was it's basically a drug trafficking corridor that they were in, right? And they were trying to make sure that whenever somebody was going through, they would stop them. So there was this group called a Rip Crew of several different people who ended up it was right towards the end of Brian's shift, and this Rip Crew ended up Rip Crew is basically drug cartel operatives that are armed, dangerous. They're usually trafficking drugs and weapons or people or anything that's illegal. They're coming through this canyon, and then they ended up shooting Brian and killing him. He ended up dying on the way to the hospital. He was shot in the spine. He was paralyzed for the last few minutes of his life. And as time went on, over the next couple of months, we started learning more and more about how these people got these weapons. So we end up finding out that the Obama administration had been running a secret operation called Operation Fast and Furious through a different part of the Obama administration, not through Border Patrol, through the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Explosives, ATF, where they were allowing guns to be sold into the hands of the Mexican drug cartels, and they knew where they were going, they knew what was happening with them, and they continued to allow it to go on. When they could have stopped that. They could have arrested the people that were trafficking these weapons, and they let it happen anyway. So we find out that two of the guns that were used to kill Brian were given to the Mexican drug cartels by this administration. And more and more facts about this have been started coming out over the past couple of years. Around February 2011 was around the time that Senator Grassley had started asking questions about it. And he was sent a letter by the Justice Department denying that this ever happened. Denying that they ever let the guns walk, that they ever let this happen, that they ever did anything like this. CBS News started investigating. Cheryl Atkinson was after there were actually several bloggers who were ahead of her.
Yeah, the
CBS News was the first like mainstream media outlet to get on it, and Cheryl Atkinson had several major stories on the CBS Evening News and all of the CBS other shows.
Let me see if I can refresh my memory, because when I started following it, I first came across it on the Sipsey Street Irregulars.
Yes,
and
Mike
was
Vanderbilt.
And there was also
the guy who runs that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there was also a website for the agents, for the border control agents, which they were posting on that website, which this reporting about, which then got
right.
Cheryl.
It's called Cleanup. Yeah, it's called Cleanup ATF. I believe it's .com or .org. I don't know which one. That site is it's a phenomenal resource for bloggers out there, anybody who's looking for stories, because these are the actual agents who are posting on there. They know how corrupt the leadership is, political leadership. And this is both political parties in general. I mean, outside of just Fast and Furious, that these actual agents have to deal with the politics of stuff instead of having to actually being able to enforce the law. And so then the actual agents will go and post stuff on that website. And then one of the things that they were putting stuff out there about was Operation Fast and Furious.
Right. And then they originally tried to blame this all on Bush, because Bush had a couple of different operations, had different names. It was Gunwalker, Castaway, Gunrunner.
I'll walk you through that. That is the Bush administration started back in, I believe it was 2005 or late 2005 or early 2006, what is mm-hmm. called Project Gunrunner, which was under Project Gunrunner, we have all these different operations. Project Gunrunner was meant to stop the weapons from going into Mexico or from being trafficked anywhere else for that matter.
And
under Project Gunrunner. What?
Working out pretty well, from what I understood.
Yeah, it was working out fairly well, actually. Yeah, except for a few different things that were going on. One of the things that happened then was this operation called Operation Wide Receiver, which was which is the major thing that the congressional Democrats keep pointing to. They say Bush did it too. Well, there's a big difference between Operation Wide Receiver and Operation Fast and Furious. In Operation Wide Receiver, first off, just so everybody knows, the same guy ran both of them. His name is Bill Newell. He still is employed by the ATF and still paid by the United States taxpayers as we speak, at least as far as we know. In Wide Receiver, they worked out a plan with the Mexican government so that when weapons were going to cross the border, everybody knew about it, and the Mexican government was going to take over surveillance from there and then try to get them at a weapons buy on the other side of the border.
Mm-hmm.
The Mexican law enforcement authorities say they never saw the truck. So it was what they call a controlled delivery, where everybody knew what was going on, and the weapons were supposed to be interdicted, and that didn't happen. That was a botched operation. And Operation Fast and Furious was not botched. When we get to the Obama, and there were a couple other minor cases that were similar to Wide Receiver during the Bush administration, run by the same guy as Fast and Furious. When we get to the Obama administration, they decided, and this is evidenced by, and there's a new congressional report that just came out from Congressman Daryl Issa and Senator Chuck Grassley this week, that lays out how the senior political officials in this administration, that includes Lanny Breuer, who's the deputy, he's not the deputy attorney general, the assistant attorney general, and runs the criminal division of the Justice Department, and he worked with Eric Holder at Covington and Burling in the same law firm. They go way back for a decade. They're good friends. And the then deputy attorney general, who was the number two in the Justice Department, David Ogden, made several moves that indicated that this administration would think that it's acceptable to do that. The Obama administration, the Bush administration, never prosecuted those cases. And the reason why is because when they found out what the ATF agents did, they decided to stop the cases, and they said this is not acceptable, and they never prosecuted them. So what happens is when the agents have a case, then they go and take it to the U.S. Attorney's Office or to some other prosecuting body. And in the Bush administration, the U.S. attorneys killed the cases because they didn't believe the tactics were acceptable. Basically, the political people in the Bush administration decided that this was unacceptable. When you get to the Obama administration, the political people in the Obama administration reopened the Bush administration cases and decided that they were going to prosecute them, sending one signal that it's acceptable to do this under President Obama. And then also they drafted a memo from the Deputy Attorney General, the number two in the Justice Department at the beginning of this administration, saying that they wanted people to focus not on small cases such as straw purchasers that they can prosecute easily. They want to go after these complex cases. So the Deputy Attorney General of the United States is telling these people to not enforce the law and to go after these big cases. In the Obama administration then, so at the beginning of Fast and Furious, so after the stage is set by these political people in the Obama administration that they're going to accept this, that they think it's okay, that unlike the Bush administration political appointees that didn't think it was okay, these guys do. They start Operation Fast and Furious. In Fast and Furious, 2,000 guns were allowed to walk. There were several a massive group of straw purchasers. They let them go, and the intention was never to interdict them. That's the biggest difference between this and the Bush administration. The Bush administration programs were botched. They meant to interdict or stop the guns from getting into the hands of criminals. In the Obama administration, they wanted the guns to get into the hands of the criminals. The only way to get them back after that point, there's two ways, is whenever law enforcement makes a bust for whatever reason, and they find all of this stuff, or when they're left at crime scenes. The Mexican
There is a problem, though. Once Mexican law enforcement makes the arrest and they have the weapons in hand, they're supposed to notify the BATF or whatever, who then goes, looks at the weapons and determines where the weapons came from, you know, who purchased it, and so on and so forth, which normally takes a couple of days. There's a program called E-Trace, which was used in the original versions of Fast and Furious, but for some reason was not being used in Obama's version of it. So the BATF was not being notified by the Mexicans, who were pissed off at us at this point. So once the Mexicans have those guns, they then take them and don't let the Mexican army then use them as their own weapons. So we never get to touch them anymore.
Well, what ended up happening is that these guns ended up getting into the hands of the cartels, not the Mexican army. So the cartel
criminals...
Well,
aren't they almost the same thing?
Well, yeah, they're pretty much, but officially, no. But unofficially, yeah. But so what ended up happening is that... And now there have been lots of people who were killed with these. And the reason why we know this is because what ends up happening is the cartel operatives, the people that are like cartel... assassins or killers, basically, or any just cartel trafficker or anything, what they regularly do is when they kill somebody or they shoot somebody, they leave the gun at the scene of the crime, whether it be inside, outside, wherever. They just ditch it right there because they know that it's worse to be caught at a later date with a gun that was used in a crime. So they just leave them there.
Basically.
What?
They're basically, to them, they're disposable because they get them so easily from us.
Well, not necessarily always from us. A lot of the guns that the cartels get, and you mentioned the connection with the Mexican army, comes from the army, and from a lot of different people that defect or that are playing both sides will raid the armories of the army down there. And then also they will go into there have been reports that they'll go across the southern border of Mexico into their other neighbors and steal military weapons down there. The idea that a lot of the weapons that are going into Mexico are coming from the United States or from gun stores in the United States is hotly contested. Liberals assert, and liberals and Democrats in Congress and in the public sphere assert that almost all of them come from gun stores in the United States. Conservatives and Senator, like Senator Chuck Grassley or Congressman Daryl Issa will counter that and say, well, no, the statistics that you're using for the Mexican government are tainted because you can't legally provide the full amount of statistics. Basically, Operation Fast and Furious appears to be the Obama administration's attempt to create a system of statistics by which guns that they put there, they knew got there.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to pull out of. That was what I was knew I said
right.
That one thing I was going to put out of you, because that's what I said back in when all this started to break back in I guess this was February of 2011, shortly after the story broke about Brian Terry. But at the same time it was breaking on Brian Terry, we also lost Jamie Zapata, when he and his partner were ambushed in Mexico, and they were there specifically to investigate Fast and Furious and the Los Zetos cartel. which when I was talking about the connection between the military and the drug lords, Los Zetas was formed by former military and police.
Mm-hmm.
That whole drug cartel, the hierarchy, came from the very people that were supposed to be fighting against them.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing is that, and that's, you know, I mean, ultimately, the only thing that, and there's not enough evidence to state that this is absolutely what happened because the Obama administration has covered up most of the evidence. But that said, the only theory that makes sense with the evidence that we know
mm-hmm.
is that the administration decided to put the guns in the hands of the Mexican drug cartels so that they could know for sure that they were guns that they put there that knew there, and then eventually they would act like they never put them there, but they got caught. And that's why I always say to people that Operation Fast and Furious ran exactly as it was supposed to. This was not a botched operation like the Bush administration ones were. In Operation Fast and Furious, they intended the guns to go there. They didn't tell Mexico what they were doing. They didn't even tell their fellow law enforcement agents what they were doing. This was like a strictly need-to-know basis, but we know that there's a lot more people that knew about it. But, I mean, usually they'll go and tell when they're doing any kind of operation like this. I mean, they won't tell the public what they're doing, and then you wouldn't want them to because that would jeopardize the chances of taking down a criminal. But the law enforcement agents will communicate with other agencies, and it's called interdiction. And they'll tell people what they're working on whenever they cross over.
Right. Right. And it was funny, though, that they put this operation into effect at a time where several things were occurring. They started to clamp down on gun dealers, and they were trying to tell everyone that if you have multiple sales, you have to go through all this paperwork. But they only did it for Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California.
They actually used the statistics that they garnered from Operation Fast and Furious to implement a long gun reporting sales. So people have to report multiple sales of long guns in the border states. There's every indication that they wanted to go further than that, but they kind of cut their losses after they realized this was turning into a scandal and took what they could get.
Right.
The U.S. attorney for Arizona at the time this was going on, he's since resigned after Fast and Furious started heating up. This was over a year, about a year ago now that he resigned. It was middle of August of 2011 that he resigned. Before back in the Clinton administration, this same guy, Dennis Burke, was a major figure in the assault weapons ban implementation. That's what he does. He wants to ban assault weapons. So, I mean, he was involved in all of this, and his name is all throughout everything here.
Right.
So, I mean, there's no other reasonable explanation for what happened and why other than that. But we don't have enough evidence to conclusively say that. Does that make sense? So we're waiting.
But
we're still fighting for the documents. That's basically what's going on.
Exactly. Well, there was two other things that were going on at the same time. And forgive me, I can't remember this guy's name. He was in charge of the ATF up in Chicago area. And they had him up in the Senate to become the head of the whole entire ATF, which is what Nelson was, the acting director of the ATF. Try to remember the guy's last name. I believe it began with a T. But
I know who
also,
you're talking about, and I forget his name,
he was
too.
He was a huge anti-gun person, but he was in charge of the ATF. And they were trying to get him confirmed in the Senate, and was sitting there. And his Senate confirmation was just sitting there like a court-warm bottle of piss. And they were trying to push it through. So they were using Fast and Furious statistics to say, no, we need this guy here now so that he can turn around and stop all these guns going over the border. Meanwhile, they're the ones that are sending the guns over the border. And at the same time, they were starting to work on the Small Arms Treaty in the UN and pushing for that. So I'm telling, what I'm looking at is I'm seeing a whole bunch of things happening at the same time. And it's not a coincidence. This is not a coincidence. You know, mm-hmm. I honestly don't believe in coincidences.
No, absolutely not. And that's the thing, is that it's the only explanation. And here's the thing. You push hard enough, we'll get there, and we'll get the information. I mean, I'm surprised we've gotten to this point. This has been a year and a half long battle, really, too, since back then. You know, I remember, I think the first story I wrote on Fast and Furious was back in March of 2011. And it's been a year and a half since all of us really got involved in this and started driving for answers. And they still don't have the answers, but we've been able to narrow it down to that there's really only one explanation. So it's like, you know, it's a process of elimination. It's like, okay, well, this could have happened this way if this didn't happen. So their explanations don't make any sense. The only thing that is going to continue helping this administration, that is going to allow this administration to get away with this, is if they can push it under the rug. If they're forced to answer these questions, if these documents are able to come out, I have every expectation that this is way, way worse than the Watergate scandal. I think you're going to see lots of people in big trouble.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was funny because when I started investigating this, and I'm looking at the dates of some of the printouts, some of these that go back to February and March of 2011, and I'm sure some of this stuff is no longer up on the ATF website, but they actually had a smart little brochure, little four-page brochure they gave to gun shops called Project Gunrunner, the Southwest Border Initiative. And inside, it tells the owners and the sellers of the weapons, you know, the key indicator is whether or not you have a trafficker, if they want to pay in cash, no checks. They don't question the price of the firearm. They have no knowledge or little knowledge of the use of the firearm. They're evasive about questioning. They have all these things to tell them what to look for and what forms to fill out to notify the ATF of a possible straw purchase, and all the phone numbers to all the field offices. But, you know, every time one of these guns were bought, the ATF was looking the other way and not even following the person with the guns. That's the main problem they had. They didn't even bother to follow, because with the original E-Trace, they would put some sort of a tracking device in the weapon. You know, but, of course, the drug traffickers, the gun traffickers would find the tracking device and take it out. But at least they were trying. In the 2009 version of Fast and Furious, they didn't even bother to do that. That
right.
is what is so mind-boggling.
Right. Well, but that's the thing, is that in Operation Fast and Furious under this administration, they intended to let these guns go into Mexico. And then the point was that they knew the only way they could find them, really, was for them to show up at crime scenes in Mexico, which means that this administration wanted to allow people to be killed with the weapons that they gave them so that they could find an argument pro gun control.
Exactly. Now, there's a guy sitting in jail. He was a gun shop owner. His name was Ian Garland. He got sentenced to 3 years. Are you familiar with that story?
I believe it's out of New Mexico. I've seen a few stories on it. I haven't personally written a lot about that. I don't think I've written anything on it.
Yeah. Well, I have it here. I've got two huge folders filled with all the stuff on Fast and Furious and the ATF. But I remember this was one of the broadcasts I did talk about Ian Garland. He was a gun shop owner, and these two guys come walking in. One happens to have been the police chief of the town, and the other one happened to have been, I believe he was the mayor.
Uh-huh.
And they said, we have relatives that live on the American side of the border, and we wanted to buy some firearms for them just to protect themselves because these illegal immigrants are coming across, and we want our families to be safe. That's the story they told him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he notifies the ATF and says, listen, they're buying a lot of weapons here. Something doesn't smell right. The ATF tells him, go ahead and make the sale. He makes the sale. He fills out all the paperwork. He submits everything exactly the way he's supposed to be doing. He ends up being arrested. The mayor and the police chief, of course, resign. They say that, oh, yes, he had no idea that this was, you know, straw purchase, so on and so forth. He knows nothing about it. They still take him, arrest him. He lost his business. His wife is on the verge of a mental breakdown. He's lost his house and everything else. And they found him guilty of gun trafficking and sentenced him to 3 years in jail.
Well, that, but basically what this is that I don't know if that would be something that would be like another Fast and Furious that the ATF was running or that law enforcement.
It was all part of Fast and Furious.
Right. I mean, what it appears to me is that this is yet another instance in which, and there have been other things that have popped up along these lines as well. There have been some other operations that this administration's conducted that have been suspect. I mean, the guns that Jaime Zapata was killed with came from Texas gun stores that by all indications appears that this administration walked the guns into Mexico. They've denied that up to this point, and it's just going to be a matter of whether or not we get the documents to prove what they're saying. But once again, it definitely appears as though that there were several other Fast and Furiouses going on throughout this administration all over the country. There are reports of another one out of Tampa.
Right. I was just going to say out of Florida.
Yeah, Operation Castaway. And I know Congressman Bill Rakes has been asking serious questions about that one. And apparently, I believe that those guns ended up in the hands of Honduran drug gangs or something like that. And I know there was another country. I think it was like a South American country.
Is that Costa Rica?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what country that they went to, but it was somewhere down there. This administration, and they've not answered questions about most of these, and there's been a massive cover up on the part of the White House. And after a year and a half, the President of the United States all of a sudden decides to come in and assert executive privilege to allow Eric Holder to keep hiding the documents because Attorney General Holder was going to end up in contempt of Congress.
Right, right. Now, if anyone wants to know whether or not Obama and Holder knew about Fast and Furious, this is a small clip from back in March of 2009, Deputy Attorney General David Ogden in a press conference, and listen to what he has to say. Here we go.
The President has directed us to take action to fight these cartels, and Attorney General Holder and I are taking several new and aggressive steps as part of the administration's comprehensive plan. Those steps include the following. DOJ's Drug Enforcement Administration, which already has the largest U.S. drug enforcement presence in Mexico, with 11 offices in that country, is placing 16 new DEA positions in Southwest Border field operations, specifically to target Mexican trafficking and associated violence. The DEA is also deploying 4 new mobile enforcement teams to specifically target Mexican methamphetamine trafficking, both along the border and in U.S. cities impacted by the cartels. DOJ's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives is increasing its efforts by adding 37 new employees in 3 new offices, using $10 million in Recovery Act funds, and redeploying 100 personnel to the southwest border in the next 45 days to fortify its Project Gunrunner, which is aimed at disrupting arms trafficking between the United States and Mexico. ATF is doubling its presence in Mexico itself from 5 to 9 personnel working with the Mexicans specifically to facilitate gun tracing activity, which targets the illegal weapons and their sources in the United States.
Now, that was March 2009, just as I started the new Fast and Furious. And now, 3 years later, they're still denying knowledge?
Yeah. And that's the thing is that's what works for them, and they have the mainstream media on their side. The mainstream media has not been pushing for answers. They've not been been digging into this storyline. and they know it. The administration knows that they have the mainstream media on their side. So it's been there's been a small group of us who have been just pounding away at this, trying to get to the bottom of it, and we're getting there. I think we have 130 congressmen calling for Attorney General Holder's resignation. You don't see that anywhere in the New York Times. I don't think it's ever been in the New York Times that there are 130 members of House members. There are 8 senators calling for the Attorney General of the United States to resign, and that's never been in the New York Times. It's never been in the Associated Press. It's never been on CNN. It's never been reported anywhere. If this was a Republican Attorney General and a Republican president, that would be on the front page every single day. It would be on the top of their broadcasts every single night. The administration knows that they have the mainstream media on their side, and that's how they're able to cover this up.
Right. Now, you wrote recently in the Daily Caller about William Hoover.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah, in that report that I talked about there that Senator Grassley and Chairman Issa came out with earlier this week, they call out 5 different ATF officials who were who they say are directly responsible for Operation Fast and Furious. It's the first of 3 major reports that Grassley and Issa are going to be coming out with. And the later reports will deal with the senior administration officials. The 5 figures were former deputy director, ATF director William Hoover, special agent in charge of Phoenix at ATF, Bill Newell, the former ATF director, Ken Melson, and Bill McMahon and Mark Chait, who were two other ATF officials. William Hoover, at the day that Chairman Issa and Senator Grassley released their report, which was Tuesday of this week, that they publicly released their report, William Hoover, who was then the deputy director of the ATF, resigned. He resigned. The ATF didn't announce it until Thursday, which is, again, what appears to be an indication that they were trying to make it look like it wasn't because of the report, but whatever. I mean, the day that the report comes out, the guy resigned. And all 4 of them have since been reassigned. All the other 4 have since been reassigned from their current positions that they had during Fast and Furious, but they're all still being paid by the United States taxpayers, as far as we know. And that's the reason why I say as far as we know is because the ATF will not answer when I ask if they are still being paid by the United States taxpayers. Are they still working for the ATF? And they won't say. So I haven't heard back from them, and it's been a couple of days now.
Yeah, now I'm trying to find.
I have a quick question, if I can intervene. What's what's to prevent? Why have? Is there anything preventing us from the Congress people or whoever from at least getting the investigation? It just seems like it's so slow. Can't we arrest somebody or charge somebody or maybe take that first initial step? It just seems like, Annie was talking about this on Southern Sense when I had no idea what Fast and Furious was. So here we are, and, nobody has been arrested. They just had the hearing last month on Holder. There's nothing anybody can do right now?
There are some things that can happen. The Speaker of the House could go and send Capitol Hill Police to go and arrest Attorney General Eric Holder. His staff has indicated that he's not going to do that whatever reason. The next steps here are going to be with the contempt of Congress vote a little over a month ago. There were 2 contempt of Congress resolutions. The first one was a criminal contempt resolution, so he's in criminal contempt of Congress. That resolution is forwarded to the district, the U.S. attorney for D.C., the District of Columbia, and that U.S. attorney has decided to not enforce that criminal contempt resolution, that would also have Attorney General Eric Holder arrested and placed before a grand jury and charged. The second contempt resolution is the civil contempt resolution, and that one is the one that the House Republicans are going to be able to do something on. And that's what they're doing right now, is they're gearing up a lawsuit against the administration, which will force a judge, and Congressman Daryl Issa just came out just a little while ago today and said that he expects a judge to there's a 100% chance, is his words, that a judge will overturn the president's assertion of executive privilege.
That's good. That's finally someone's
so,
doing
but
something.
Basically, that's where this is going to go. And then when they have all the documents and the proof, then people will start being arrested.
Yeah. Now the four people that you mentioned, right after Fast and Furious broke, and they said, "All right, fine, we're going to shuffle people around. We're going to discipline these people that are responsible for it." Let's see, McMahon and Newell and Vop was another one of the supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
There was promoted to management positions.
Demoted or anything. These guys were promoted. They were moved up. We don't know if they were moved. I don't know specifically if they were moved up in pay grade, but they were into higher responsibility things after Fast and Furious. Ken Melson, the then acting director of the ATF, and you know what? You got to give him credit because he has cooperated with congressional investigators. He's one of the few who has, and he's testified against the administration behind closed doors at this point, and we'll see if that'll go public in the near future.
Yeah, that was July 4th last year.
With regard to that, he was moved up from ATF into Department of Justice headquarters to become a senior advisor to the Attorney General. They're rewarding
circle.
These people for arming the Mexican drug cartels in an effort to kill people. That's what they're doing. It's not – there's nothing I think the average American would be – and this is part of the problem is that this all comes back to is the mainstream media going to have the guts to cover this? And they haven't to this point. I mean, they do when something major breaks. They'll have a small story here, there, or wherever. But is the mainstream media going to have the guts to cover this? Because the average American citizen out there, and as it starts to we start to figure out more and more what happened, they're outraged. People are outraged by this. Polls show that they want the president to release the documents. They want 59% of people around the country want Eric Holder to resign. And that includes Democrats. Like this isn't a partisan issue as much as the congressional Democrats in Washington would like it to be. The thing moving forward. I mean, the part of the thing is that when you're dealing with something like this, it's an intense investigation. I always point people to Watergate. Watergate took several years to really come down. This one's taking just about as long, if not longer, because there are that many more people involved in this. And there are and just like Watergate, there is a massive cover-up. There are people that are withholding documents. The president is using secrecy powers, executive privilege, to hide stuff from the American people and from Congress. The attorney general has failed to cooperate with subpoenas. And that's the thing. They have to – it's tough because when you're dealing with a political environment where, first off, I mean, Fast and Furious is hardly the only thing that's going on in the country right now. There are so many other things that are also important. And so these guys have to look like they're being reasonable. So the congressional Republicans have to look like they're not pushing too hard, that they're being reasonable.
I think we've just lost Matt for a second. Hopefully Matt's microphone will come back on in a second here. Anyway, this is a really, really super interesting. You back, Matt?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So basically what I was saying is the congressional Republicans have to make it look like they're not pushing too hard. They have to make it look like they're being reasonable, and then and every little step that they can take is helping move this along. But they do not have here's the thing. They have public support. The American people en masse, Democrats, progressives, liberals, conservatives, Republicans, Tea Partiers, everybody wants to get to the bottom of this. The only people who are stopping it are the congressional Democrats like Congressman Elijah Cummings, and he's probably one of the biggest ones. Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi has been a problem in this one. And the administration figures who are using their secrecy powers to hide the information from the American people. We're going to get there. I know that. I know I'm very confident about this one. I'm not as confident. I'm pretty sure we're going to get there. I'm pretty sure we're going to get the answers, but it's just going to take time.
Yeah,
it's going to take
persistence
and time, and we'll get there.
Right. I know we will. But, you know, what I'm thinking is that the Fast and Furious is going to tie directly into what's going on with ICE right now with their catch and release policies. And right now we have a certain ICE agent, 18 years in ICE and military veteran too, made an arrest of an illegal immigrant back in March. In June, 3 months later, President Obama signed that executive order about, you know, selective prosecution. And he was told at that point to release the prisoner, and he didn't want to do that. So now he's coming up on charges by ICE for disobeying a direct order. And this guy was wanted on warrants.
There's a political agenda, and this is the way the Obama administration works. They have no care in the world for the rule of law. They don't care. The political appointees in this administration direct the actual law enforcement agents, and this happens throughout government. And you know what? Wonderful for that agent for sticking up for what he knows is right. Unlike in Fast and Furious, where agents did do what the administration told them to. But the thing is that they use their political agenda. Let me rephrase that. They force their political agenda through by directing people to not follow the law. And that's exactly what's going on right now, is that they're trying to push for, and there's every indication there are leaked documents from this administration that show that they're going to try to do an all-out amnesty for everybody, not just people that would qualify under the DREAM Act, or the administration version of the DREAM Act. They want to do this for everybody. They want to do a massive en masse amnesty. And what they're going to do, because they can't even accomplish that legislatively, they're directing law enforcement to just ignore the laws and act like it was already happened. I mean, that's the thing, is that they had congressional support for the DREAM Act. I mean, whether or not any people agree with it, I mean, they had Senator Marco Rubio was going to do something. Like, that's the thing. They were working on it, and they were going to make it happen. And then the administration decides to go and just go and do it on its own anyway, in an effort that has questionable legality. At the same time, on the individual level, they're imposing their political beliefs in places where politics doesn't belong. Politics doesn't belong in law enforcement.
No, and not at all. And matter of fact, just saw something coming across the wire that now the TSA is definitely going to be unionized. Hello,
yes.
SEIU
yeah.
just got themselves a whole new bunch of members.
Well, not SEIU. This one is the AFGE, which is the American Federation of Government Employees. And, I mean, TSA, first off, are not law enforcement officers. They are security guards. They do not have the power to arrest anybody, so they are not law enforcement officers. I'll make that clear. They are security officers, meaning that they are federal agents, so to speak, in that if somebody disobeys an order from a TSA personnel, then they are breaking federal law, but they do not have the power to arrest anybody, so they're not law enforcement. But anyway, the where I was going with that is that the when you've got an agency that's got so many problems with big government, TSA's problems are big government problems. Why does anybody in this world think that adding more government and more big government and big unions into that mix is going to fix it? It doesn't make any sense. I can only imagine what's going to happen from here. I mean, people flying all over the country are going to be waiting longer. There's going to be more problems. There's going to be less accountability, even less than there is now. And, you know, and nobody will be everything is just going to get worse.
More bureaucracy. That's all.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, adding bureaucracy to the problem of bureaucracy.
Hearing you talk and just talking about basically in so many ways how Barack Obama just basically wipes his butt with the Constitution and we do nothing as taxpayers. But on the same token, we are doing, as Ted Cruz won, conservatives are strongly winning in these primaries, which is also being kept silent. You had talked about many of the Congress people who the media is not reporting on. Slowly but surely, you know, I mean, this is just...
That's why I'm very optimistic. I think the American people are outraged.
Well, and it's such an injustice, I mean, that, okay, Marco Rubio, you mentioned, was on board. Okay, they're going to do it, but he does it on his own. And Barack Obama has announced stuff like that. He said, we're not going to wait for Congress to do it. We're just going to get the job done. And they cheer. And I think, what a bunch of sheep. I mean, that's how Hitler got his tenure.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, I wouldn't personally, just because I've seen what happens to people that go there with that comparison. But, like, I mean, that's basically what's going on. I mean, that's the thing. I'm very optimistic because I think people around the country are showing, by showing up at these polls and voting for people, is very conservative people around the country in all the primaries, and we're seeing Tea Partiers win. We see Ted Cruz in Texas. I mean, this is a sign that not only is the Tea Party movement not dead, like the mainstream media would like it to be, like liberals would like it to be, it's stronger than it's ever been. And here's why. You don't need to have a rally on the Capitol Hill Mall to make a statement. And it's probably better that there aren't rallies right now because people are out there working and they're putting the elbow grease in behind the scenes and making these things happen. Conservative activists are more active than they've ever been. I mean, look, there's more and more primaries around the country that are happening. The freshman class that the Tea Party elected in 2010, all 87 of those people are undefeated in primaries. And here's the thing, and this is what I was saying when I was talking about specifically with Fast and Furious, but with regard to anything as well, is that regardless of what you see on the front page of the New York Times or what you see on the front page of the Washington Post, or even in your local paper if they're biased too, the average American gets it. They get it. And, the elitist media can't cover up for this administration for much longer. Eventually it's going to get to the point where we're going to be November 6th and people are going to make a choice. And I see the average American person is outraged at this, whether they're liberal or conservative. They know what's going on. I get emails from Democrats around the country all the time telling me, they're like, you know, I'm a Democrat, but I don't like what this guy is doing. Like, that's the thing. And I think whatever the issue is, I mean, here's the thing is that his policies aren't working, you know.
Absolutely. And you know what I'm finding, because that I don't know if you're aware that I'm the webmaster and founder for the Buford Tea Party here in South Carolina. I'm finding that more and more people are getting I'm trying to think of the proper word, but buoyed and more gutsy in being outspoken because now they feel that, hey, listen, there is a majority of people here in America that do get it, that do understand what it's supposed to be all about. And now you're finding representatives in the House and senators in Congress that are finally stepping forward and say, all right, now I've got a powerful group of people behind me. I can take the battle to the floor and I can win. It's one of the things that Senator DeMint said to me. He said, when the Tea Party started coming around, I finally found that I'm able to have a voice because before I was shouted down, I was shuffled to the side and no one paid attention. But now you have someone like Representative Mike Kelly in his recent speech just last week. And I'm going to play that because I thought it was absolutely fantastic because here is someone that you never even heard of finally stepped forward saying, now I can really speak, someone is going to listen, we can get something done. This is Representative Kelly last week on the for the House.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Pennsylvania, rise?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I rise in strong opposition to this motion
is
to recommit.
Is the gentleman opposed to the motion?
Sir? Yes.
The gentleman is recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In 2011, we came to this House for one reason, and it was a motion to recommit. We recommitted the people of the United States that we were going to change the way business was done in this town. This motion to recommit is a joke. This is ridiculous. Now, let me tell you about what it's like to be in the real world and not inside the Beltway. I operate a business that my father started back in 1953 after being a parts picker in a General Motors warehouse, going to fight the war and coming back home. I called our body shop manager today, Jason Scholes. He's been with me for 26 years. And I said to Jason, I need to know the cost of tape, Jason. He goes, well, what are you talking about, Mike? I said, in our body shop, when people wreck their car and bring their car, and I know we have to use a lot of tape. He says, oh, my goodness, has the cost of tape gone crazy? So we use two types of tape, Mike. We use green tape. Green tape is the tape we use when we have to use water on a job, and we have to make sure that tape sticks. He said, that's up to $4 a roll. I said, tell me about the other tape. He said, well, the other tape is yellow tape. I said, yellow tape? Tell me what the yellow tape does. He said, that's when we're going to paint a car, and we don't have to use the green tape. The yellow tape's a little less expensive. It's only $2 a roll. He said, but Mike, I got to tell you, we're spending $160 a month on tape, and it's really starting to make me wonder about whether I'm doing the right thing. I said, so Jason, we're $1,000 a year on green and yellow tape. He says, yes, we are. I said, Jason, you know what the cost of red tape is? He goes, I have no idea. We don't use red tape. I said, oh, yes, we do. It's $1.75 trillion. That's the cost of red tape. And I called my friend Don Shamey at Next Tier Bank, and I said, Don, we've known each other since we were kids. Our wives know each other. Our kids grew up together. We do a lot of things together. I've done business here for 40 years. You're right across the street from me. Don, tell me about the new regulations. He said, well, Mike, if you take a look at it, there's 1,100 pages now that are the definition of whether you're a qualified borrower or not. I said, it only took 1,100 pages for the government to determine what the definition is of a qualified borrower. Are you kidding me? Do you mean to sit here and say that you are serious? We renovated a ballpark in my hometown. A guy named Tom Bernatoski, veteran. Took us a couple $1 million to renovate our ballpark. The day we were going to open up, I got a call at the dealership. It said, Mike, would you come down? I said, why? What's going on? He said, we're having trouble with the occupancy permit. So I went down to see. I said, so what's the problem? He said, well, here, come in the men's room. Let me show you what the problem is. I said, we have 1,500 people who want to come see the opening ball game. They say, yeah, but we've got a major problem. You see, the mirrors in the restroom are a quarter of an inch too low. Oh, so you can't possibly open that ballpark. So you want to know the price of regulation? You want to talk about the thousands and thousands of pages that we put on the back of the job creators? You want to talk about creating jobs in America? When you want to see a nation that doesn't want to participate but wants to dominate in the world market, then let them rise. Take the heavy boot off the throat of America's job creators and let them breathe.
Amen.
I don't think I could have summed it up any better myself.
No. That's really awesome. I mean, just... Again, Annie probably forgot to unmute her mic. But anyway, Again,
oh,
here's
I'm
a
sorry,
situation.
I forgot to unmute my mic again. Yes.
Yeah, again, here's a situation. That was perfect, Annie. Again, here's a situation where they don't want to do that. That's a good thing for government because basically it, again, makes them feel so important. And the bottom line is, you know when all of this really, as far as jobs really, really started happening? It happened in the mid-90s when we got the World Trade Organization and NAFTA and all this so-called great free trade, great for them, not for us. And once again, I mean, who cares if the mirrors, that is ridiculous. These people better hope I never become president. Because I tell you, whoever said they couldn't open because of the mirrors, oh, my God. These bureaucrats are just ridiculous. What next?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is that, and, you know, I've been working here at the Daily Caller for about 2 years, and I dig into stories all the time. And I tell you this, this whole government, and this is I have to say this is a Republican and a Democrat problem. This isn't just one party. But you go in and you find all of these different things into all these different agencies. There are agencies that there's always something new. There's always some kind of wacky thing going on that, like, the average American out there is going, why does it have to be like that? Like, why does the government do it that way? There's no legitimate explanation for so many different things that are all throughout Washington. The whole government is overbloated and over-confusing. And
everything they
starting
do is like
to
the tax
be
code.
There's, and I think that that's really what I think the Tea Party movement represents, is it represents the surge in opposition to the ludicrous government that's growing and out of control.
I try to explain to everyone that the Tea Party, it's not for Republicans, it's not for Democrats. We don't care what your political party is. What we are there for is for the principle. We are there for, oh, Jesus, the word just went right out of my mind. We're there for the doctrine. We're there for the standard. We're there for the principle. We want you to come back to the guiding principles that form this nation. You know, I don't care what side of the party line you're standing on, but if you're believing in limited government, fewer taxes, and allowing the capitalist system to work, then that's what we'll support you.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of standing behind an individual or party ideal, stand for the ideal that built this country.
And that's the thing, is that both what our guest has been educating us on, and all here's all the wrongs. And one of the reasons almost no party is really moving too fast, as you mentioned, Rubio is on board, other things, they're like cartels. They got their own little groups, and it's all about the party. It's not about the Constitution on either side. Where the thing that frustrates them with Tea Partiers or people like us, we don't flex. We stand by what the Constitution says. We stand by extremely limited government and not oppressing the people. As Judge Napolitano said, when we fear government, that's tyranny. When government fears us, that's liberty. And that's very true.
That's exactly what it is. Like, and that's the thing is that's the one thing that I think that the Tea Party movement has done, and also conservatism that's been rising. And by the way, and that's the thing is that this is continuing to happen all over the country. I mean, look at Deb Fischer in Nebraska, Ted Cruz in Texas, and there's more all around the country. Those are just two. Mia Love, I think, in Utah. All of these different conservatives that are popping up all around and continuing to win over and over and over again are putting that fear into these government officials. They fear the conservative wrath that's going to come down on them if they don't do their job. And that's the thing, and that's why you're starting to see it. I think you're starting to see people go back to what they're supposed to be doing here.
I forget the name of the group, but it is nice. You need organization in politics. That group that helped got rid of Lugar in Indiana, too, they came in to help Ted Cruz. And, you know, that's what we need. You know, they play ruthlessness. I mean, Annie is a big Tea Partier. She started her own tea party in her hometown, and you know, it's the image of the big media, which you mentioned is in the back pocket of Obama. They image tea partiers as, you know, troublemakers or everything that they're not. And the bottom line is what they are not is they are not people who believe in bureaucracy. And
well, and that's the thing is that there has to be new media, there has to be new organizations that will continue to emerge that will offer the countering perspective that the mainstream media fails to do on a daily basis. Now, the mainstream media is going to carry the water of the left. They're going to do that. They're going to carry, you know, as the late great Andrew Breitbart always explained it, his term is that they're the Democrat media complex. What they are is, and this is the majority of reporters in this town, there are a few exceptions. But there are majority reporters in Washington and New York and the mainstream media outlets. What they do is they view things through the lens of the left, and they hide their left-wing bias, which is fine if you're a left-winger, just say so, but they hide it behind the false notion of objectivity. And when they continue to push they're pushing left-wing ideals, for a long time, there was nothing to counter it, and now there is. And they're terrified again, which is good.
Yeah, and what I'm finding also is that young people like you, when you go to college, you're swamped with all this liberal bullshit. Excuse my language, but that's exactly what it is. And if you've got a malleable brain, then you get brainwashed. If you're someone like you, you walk out of there going, is this what education is supposed to be about? That guy is an idiot. And you walk your own path.
I voted for Barack Obama in 2008. I was a liberal. And then when I got to Washington, I started seeing things in a different light. And
it happens. I mean, I supported G.W. Bush, too. But that happens. And, you know, sometimes our biggest mistakes, it's almost like sometimes when you realize what you've done, it almost is the best wake-up call. You know, we've all voted for candidates that have turned our back on what we believed in or what we thought they believed in, et cetera. The bottom line is, you know, watching some of these changes and just seeing slowly but surely. And another thing, it's not being reported by the media, but I'll tell you something. With the people we have, if they can pull off victories in November, an awful lot of bureaucrats are going to be sweating come Inauguration Day in January, because I'll tell you, these are Americans. Many of them are retired Marines. That they're people who have a great agenda for this country, and it's the complete opposite of the direction we've been going the past 15 years.
Exactly.
Yeah, and in addition to that, too, that's the thing is that the Tea Party movement has continued to keep the boot on the throat of Republicans as well. So everybody thinks the Tea Party is just going after Democrats. No, you got like the majority of Tea Partiers out there are keeping their pressure on Republicans to make sure that they do the right thing as well. That's the thing is that the House and the Senate have both moved in, even though the Senate's still Democrat controlled, but there's more people in there that are more conservative. And that's the thing is that the same thing in the House is that there are more people that are true to the conservative side of things that are influencing the direction of the country. And more and more of this starts to move, and that's the thing is it's a young movement, but as more and more of it starts to grow, that it will influence the future even more so. I mean, for instance, if Mitt Romney wins the election, I fully expect him to be pushed to the right by the Tea Party.
Absolutely, absolutely. And something I find really funny is because now this month is supposed to be the DNC convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, and they had to go from this huge venue down to a smaller one because so many people are now backing out. They don't want to be associated with Barack Obama. But now there's a counter rally that's going to be like right across the street by a bunch of conservatives and Tea Party people called the Red State Rally. So this is going to be interesting to see how the media is going to play it up going on when the convention hits town in Charlotte, North Carolina. Listen, we're down to our last 5 minutes here, Matt, and it has been fascinating. And I had a whole stack of other things to start talking to you about, and we haven't even come close to getting near them. This has been an absolutely fantastic hour and a half. It has been a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Not a problem.
Yeah, certainly has been.
It's been fun. So.
And
well, you're welcome here anytime, my friend. You're welcome to call in and just be a caller, too.
Okay.
Matt, again, definitely want you to come back as a guest, and I'll be talking to you. And, Matt, people can find you at thedailycaller.com, and
mm-hmm.
you're also up on Twitter. You want to put your Twitter name out there?
Yeah, sure. It's just mboyle1.
And that's B-O-Y-L-E. You can
mm-hmm.
find Matt Boyle at the Daily Caller. Make sure you put the Daily Caller on your must in your inbox so you can read Matt every single day.
All right. Well, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
All right. You too. Thanks.
Man, I wish I miss most other people that are 24 years old or that intelligent politically.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, listen, we're down to our last 4 minutes here. It has been this has gone past really fast. Just want to let people know what's coming up for our next couple of shows. On next Tuesday, we have someone that I cannot put their picture up on the website simply because he's had death threats made against him and his family. He goes by the name Alinsky Defeater up on Twitter. His name is Jeff Hedgepeth. And he's written a book about, I left the book in the other room. The Rules for Radicals that Alinsky put out, well, he put out a conservative version of it and saying how we can counter all of Alinsky's rules, but doing it as a conservative without the moral decrepitude that Alinsky uses, doing it properly. So he's going to be on with us. Yeah, so but unfortunately cannot put his picture up there because we have to help protect his family. And then on Friday, we're going to have David Almasi with the National Center for Policy, and that'll be another fantastic thing. He'll probably talk mostly about this voter ID controversy as well as other matters. So we're going to have two great shows coming up.
Awesome. Well, definitely looking forward to it. So we will see you. Everybody have a good weekend. Annie, we'll see you next week. Tuesday's a big day here in Michigan.
Yes, and our prayers go out to Jermaine. Hopefully he'll make a speedy and fast recovery and have him coming back onto BTR. Kessler is in the room, and Doc Jones, they both have great shows also. Check out the Doc Jones' his show called?
Yeah.
Situation Report.
Doc Jones is not on today. He is on Monday through Thursday at 8 a.m. He has banker hours.
Tonight.
Tesler is at Tesler, of course, today, tomorrow, and, of course, Sunday at 7 p.m. Socialism is not an option, the Sunday edition.
Okay. Well, everyone have a fantastic, safe, and healthy weekend. And until Tuesday, good night and God bless. See you next week.
Good afternoon, everybody.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
Thank you.
look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.